Well, this is the Larry Mueller Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I am Jill Nadeau, and we're talking about the importance of wetlands and how Native American tribes in Wisconsin are leading the way when it comes to protecting wetlands. Our guest is Jessica Strand, an environmental specialist with the Mushkazeebi, or Bad River, Natural Resources Department. And, of course, back with us is the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetland Association, Katie Belfort. What do you want to know about wetlands? Well, give us a call, 800-642-1234. Or, of course, you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Jessica, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. And Katie, always good to see you.
Great to be here. Thanks.
So let's just start from the very beginning here. What makes an area a wetland? Katie, you go first.
Sure. Well, we like to say it's those places between the places that are always wet, like lakes and rivers, and the places that are always dry, like prairies or woodlands. And so if people know what those places are, and wetlands are that complex part in the middle. They have water in them for all or part of the year, but that's pretty critical because there are many wetland types that don't have water some of the year. They're dry some of the year, and so sometimes they get overlooked as being wetlands. But they're really important because they're also the places on our landscape that are there to help manage water. And so when we have a snowmelt or strong spring rains, they're the places that help absorb and hold that water, slow it down so that it doesn't go whooshing down our streams and rivers and causing, you know, erosion and whatnot. So those critical in-between places.
And Jessica, how have the wetlands and watersheds been important to the tribes?
So wetlands and watersheds are important to the tribes because they are an integral part of the landscape. They keep rivers and streams very healthy. As Katie indicated, a lot of times wetlands are what's absorbing a lot of the stormwater or snowmelt flow, and then kind of distributing it throughout the year to make sure that those other water bodies are receiving water in a more manageable manner, and also cleaner water, because wetlands do actually help filter out a lot of those contaminants. And for the tribe, that's very important. Bad River's reservation, aside from the portion on Madeline Island, exists on the downstream third of a very large watershed. So there's lots of wetlands not only on the reservation itself, especially the coastal sluice complex, but then there's a lot of wetlands upstream that are connected to the reservation through those water courses, those smaller streams, and then the larger rivers.
So what are some of the threats that we have to be concerned about for wetlands? Katie, you go first, and then Jessica, I'd like you to jump in too.
Yeah, those are great questions. People often think that it's maybe development or roads and whatnot, and that was certainly true earlier in our history. And when you say we've lost half of our wetlands, conversion to other land uses is one, and certainly development. But now, really, the greater threat to wetlands is how well they're able to function in a landscape that we have changed so very much. And thinking about, we might have mapped wetlands that are in a particular area, but if there's a stream that's downcut so much below that wetland, that's functioning as a drain for the wetland. And so the water that normally that wetland would hold is leaving the wetland. And so you lose that service. And so really taking a look at that function of how our wetlands are functioning in our landscapes is one of the things that we see as a risk, because having them sort of mapped is not enough. Are they working the way that we need them to be working? And so certainly invasive species are a huge threat. There's lots of ubiquitous invasive species. Reed canary grass, Phragmites is growing. Even cattail, which many of us think of as like the go-to wetland plant, right? It's like the symbol of wetlands, but there's an invasive species version, a different species from out of the region that came in and is hybridizing with our native cattail. And at this point, you can't really tell them apart, and you just have to treat them like a weed if they're behaving like a weed. And so usually invasive species are a sign that there's something else wrong with the system. And so taking, just sort of going out and killing the invasive species alone is important, but it won't be sufficient, right? You have to look at the root causes of what's happening in the landscape that might be triggering the invasion of those weeds. And so that's looking at the hydrology and making sure that the sort of whole watershed is, you're taking that whole watershed perspective, because looking just at the wetland itself is not enough.
Mm-hmm. And Jessica, what about in your area? What are some of the threats that are maybe a little unique to the area?
There's a lot of threats to wetlands that aren't necessarily unique to our area. There are some in relation to climate change. Most areas are seeing climate change these days. But as Katie mentioned, in our area, climate change has led to larger storm events, greater precipitation, which leads to erosion of those streams. And when the streams are disconnected from the wetlands, we are seeing the change in function of those wetlands. But a lot of threats to wetlands are cumulative. You know, it's maybe a smaller development here or a road here over there. Maybe not appropriately sizing the culverts for that road or the crossings for that road. And then with climate change stressing those wetlands, these other smaller changes adjacent or within the wetlands can really impact the function and the health of the wetland ecosystem.
So what do you do in your job to help the wetlands and the watersheds become what they should be? What do you do, like, with other organizations or the people in the area?
Right. Great question. So the Mishkazibi Natural Resources Department works both on reservation to study the wetlands and to understand how they might be changing over time. So that means our water resources program is doing a lot of water quality monitoring or monitoring of plant communities in a wetland. But then that also means working in the regulatory realm as well, where we do project reviews for proposed projects on reservation. And we try to make sure that those projects are minimizing impacts to the environment, which includes impacts to wetlands, and kind of providing support to basically kind of make that proposed project as environmentally sound as we can and make sure that it's meeting all the tribe's regulations. But then there's other groups that we work with off reservation, including WWA. We just got done making some lovely videos with Katie's and her colleagues' support. So those are we did a series of three videos. Redcliffe had another video that they did with WWA, and those four videos were just released over the month of May. So they can be found both on Bad River's website and also on WWA's website. And those are really, really a fun part of wetland conservation work, because it's wonderful to be able to talk about why wetlands are important.
And we also have a link on our page to those videos. So it's WPR.org/Larry. And when you look at this particular show, you'll see the link right under the description. So, Katie, those must be fun to do, those videos. What kind of message are you trying to get out?
It's been such a wonderful project. This is our second iteration. We worked with the Oneida Nation a couple of years ago. And we just wanted folks to understand some of the sort of we talk a lot about the ecological reasons for why wetlands are important. And I loved your question about, you know, what do you do to care for them? And sometimes when we talk with our tribal partners, like, they don't even quite know how to answer the question because it's so fundamental to who they are as a people. And so learning about that and appreciating how wetlands and water are such a core part of a culture, and that the revitalization and the caring for it is just part of how we live, how they live, how I want to live, and that it also that helps with revitalizing the culture in addition to protecting and revitalizing the landscape. So it's so, you know, we work with the tribes so they articulate the story that they want to share about the work that they're doing on behalf of wetlands and watersheds. They identify folks within their community that they think would do a really good job sharing that message. And working with all those folks is just so inspiring and wonderful that it's just a joy to bring those messages out to a wider audience. So if you have a few minutes, they're only sort of 4, maybe 5 minutes each to watch, and they're lovely and just give you a little bit of insight into what the work is and why it matters to them, mm-hmm. and how it influences their people.
They are very nice to watch. And like you said, they're rather short. They get the message across and they're beautiful because they're looking at wetlands that are gorgeous. So let's go to Michael in Wauwatosa. He's got a question for us. Hi, Michael.
Hi. Good afternoon or morning. I was calling to ask about what the permitting process would be for the project that I'd like to explain. I have some wetland. It's just wet ground. It gets pretty soggy in spring. And I'm quite certain that if you dig a hole, it would fill in with water and you could create a little pond. And I don't want to create a fish pond. I want to create a pond for amphibians and insects and everything but fish, basically. And it would be like reverse succession because I'm quite certain it's filled in over time, you know, just from the vegetation building up. So what I'd like to do is have the wet ground scooped out, put on the upland, and let it fill in with water and create some habitat that way. So I was wondering what the permitting process would be for that.
Well, thanks so much, Michael, for your interest in providing habitat for those critters. It's wonderful. And, you know, before I start about permitting, to answer your direct question, I want to just give a little bit of background. When you talk about restoring wetlands, the best thing to do is look at what was there historically. What happened in your area? Was there a wetland there historically? How did the water flow work there? What's changed in that? And then how might you be able to restore those conditions? Sometimes when we try to put something in that maybe wasn't there historically, it's not as successful because it's not what nature intended for that area. It can be done. And I'm not saying you shouldn't dig a pond for wildlife, but I would encourage you to sort of take a look at what's already there and how you might enhance the habitat that you have to be able to attract the critters that you're interested in. And it may or may not involve scooping out or digging a hole. There might be other techniques that actually would be more effective. Certainly there's cases where sediment has come in and covered up an area, right, has sort of built up in an area. And there are many cases where removing that deposition is really important to the health of the underlying wetland. And so sometimes that's a really excellent approach. So I'll refer you to our website where we have a section for landowners that talks through some of these processes. We have a handbook for wetland landowners that just gets you started with some information and basic ideas. And then we have links to lots of resources where you can get additional information, where you can find maps, historical maps, aerial photos, other things that will help you see the bigger picture of how your land fits in with the broader environment. And maybe what you need to do is not, you can't do all those big picture things because you live in some place where there's just, you have so little control over what's going on in the surrounding landscape. But it might offer some suggestions. And then permitting, I'm going to refer you to the Department of Natural Resources water management specialists because they will be the ones that know what the process is. I will encourage you to be careful with the word pond because sometimes that triggers a regulatory conversation that might not be what you have in mind and that might have a different set of permit requirements. And so we've just learned over the years that pond and wetland, sometimes people don't hear them in the same way and might result in different permit process. So just have a conversation about what your goals are in terms of habitat creation would be my suggestion.
Okay, thank you very much for that question, Michael. We're talking with Katie Belfus, the Outreach Programs Director at the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, and Jessica Strand, an Environmental Specialist with the Mushkasebe, a Natural Resources Department. What questions do you have about wetlands? Join in by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And this is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Clara Neipert is our on-air producer today, and Sarah Hopeful is our technical director. After 12, we're going to be talking about how to use some of those watersheds with paddling, so stay tuned for that. But right now we're talking about wetlands, and let's go back to the phones. Jack in Madison has a call. Hi, Jack.
Good morning. So I was thinking of a couple things, and if you don't have time to get to all my questions, that's okay. But one of the comments I heard your guest made was about one of the greatest challenges to wetland stay not being like that there are too few of them due to development or whatever, but that, like, given our currently existing infrastructure and landscape setup, that they may be at risk of being destroyed where we are now. And so that's one of them. And then on another note, in the spirit of interdependency, I wondered what state government and local groups can do to help tribal nations with wetland improvement and help. So those are just some of my thoughts.
Okay, thanks, Jack. Katie, you want to take that?
Yeah, I want to thank you for the questions, Jack. And just about the risks to wetlands, I think what I was trying to say, and maybe Jessica said it better than I, there's cumulative impacts over the last 150 years that's changes to the landscape. And those are the changes. Yes, it's the wetland loss. It's the loss of half of our wetlands over that period of time and the fact that we don't have those wetlands and the landscape change in the environment around throughout our state, right? There's changes all over. So it is a cumulative impact over time. And it is that loss of wetlands that has happened of half of our wetlands has a huge impact. Actually, we've sort of not done a formal study of this, but we've sort of overlain Wisconsin's impaired waterways and Wisconsin's areas of wetland loss maps sort of together. And it's really striking how aligned those maps are, that we do see more impaired waterways in areas where we've seen more wetland loss. And so while it's super important to hold the line on protecting the remaining wetlands that we have, restoring wetlands in areas where they've been lost is really where the most opportunity lies for improving our waterways and making sure that we are doing that strategically. It's not just a wetland here or wetland there. That's not going to reach our problem. We have to have the right location, wetlands, the right kinds of wetlands in the right places on the landscape, in the right quantities to do the services, provide the services that we want. So I'll let Jessica talk about ways that state and other entities can help assist tribes. And then if we have time to circle back, I can talk about something that's happening in our legislature right now for local communities.
Perfect. Jessica, go ahead.
Oh, yep. Thank you for the question. So coordination between tribal governments and the state or the feds, including like nonprofit groups or volunteer groups, is very important for outreach and making sure that the message about why wetlands are important on the landscape and why they're worth protecting gets out to as many people as possible, because it's really a better understanding that's really going to lead to the establishing a base for moving forward with wetland protection, wetland restoration, And a lot of times it's misunderstanding why wetlands are important to a landscape that kind of leads to decisions that might lead to their degradation. So so if sharing the videos that we recently worked with WWA on, getting your friends and neighbors to watch those, there's a lot of great information there. That's a type of outreach. Or joining in, I believe WWA still puts on like different field trips throughout the year, and they get the message out there about why wetlands are important, and you actually get to go visit some of them. And then communication, right? The different groups working together and communicating and understanding the interconnectedness of wetlands on the landscape and impacts made upstream could result in changes downstream. Even to wetlands, that's another important way that outside groups can work with the tribe and in kind of protecting wetlands.
Okay, Katie, you wanted to add something else?
Yeah. So we talked about ways the state can support local communities. There is a a bill making its way through our legislative process here in the state that would establish a grant program that would do two things. It would provide funding for local communities to assess flood erosion hazards in their communities and places where wetlands find those places on the landscape where wetland restoration or management could help alleviate some of those risks. And then the part two is to actually apply for the funding to do some of that on the ground restoration work. We've been working with Ashland County, you know, the neighbors of the Mashkabezee Bad River Tribe, because they at one point, maybe even today, are spending 75% of their town budget on road repair, and a lot of that is storm damage related. And so we've been collaborating for many years on a process to assess the landscape and those flood erosion hazards. And now we're moving to the point we've developed a really great tool for doing that can be exported to other communities. But that town, that county did not have the resources to do that by themselves. And so having support coming from the state to help small communities like that be able to take on projects to assess their wetlands and where wetland restoration could help alleviate their challenges, it would be a really great step in that direction. So stay tuned.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much for that those questions, Jack. We appreciate that. If you have a question that you would like answered, give us a call, 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email if you'd like to. That's ideas@wpr.org. And, you know, Jessica was mentioning about some of the outreach programs that you have. And one of the ones that I think is really fun is your wetland coffee break. Why don't you talk about that a little bit, Katie?
Sure. Well, that was one of those programs that we all did during the early days of COVID when you couldn't go outside, you couldn't interact with anybody. So we took it all online and took our messages about wetlands and why they matter and all the critters and interesting things that make them home and started offering initially a weekly, and now it's about twice a month program that's in a Zoom meeting, and we invite speakers from around the state to come and share their information with our audience, everything from wetland soils to amphibians to restoration techniques, lots of different topics. And it's been 3 years now that we've been doing them, and you know, COVID is mostly over, I guess we can say, and we're back out in our busy external lives, but we're still offering the program because it's turned out to be a great way for us to get that information out to other folks and reach a wider audience and connect folks across the state. So people can check out our Wetland Coffee Break, the page of our website, and see upcoming programs. We do them on Friday mornings at 10:30, about twice a month. It's pretty flexible about which exact days they are. We also have an index of the past programs so that if you're curious, we record and post recordings to all of those coffee break sessions on our webpage. And so you can take a peek at that index and find all kinds of interesting presentations.
Yeah, quite a variety too. So definitely check it out. And the website for that is wisconsinwetlands.org. Nice and simple.
Yeah, so thank you.
I did. What kind of things are you doing for kids? I mean, summer's coming up. Do you have anything for kids?
You know, we as an organization, because we're small and mighty, but small, we have to choose really carefully the projects that we get involved in. And we have so far made a decision to not do sort of K-12 education because there's a lot of groups that are good at that already. And so we're happy to support those organizations with information and resources that might help them. But we don't do direct outreach to kids ourselves because we're focusing on working with the folks who are in the decision-making position right now. Super important to get the kids on board for the future because we're building tomorrow's, you know, decision makers. But for us right now as an organization, we focus on current decision makers.
Sure. What about you, Jessica? Do you utilize any of the children in the tribal area?
So the Natural Resources Department actually partners with the Education Department here at the tribe and hosts a youth program throughout the summer. So it's one of several different youth programs on the reservation. So it's a several week long program that involves the tribal youth. There's a lot of different activities that go on, but getting together and shadowing different staff members of the Natural Resources Department is usually a day or two within that program. So there would be the opportunity for youth to learn directly from the different professionals working for the tribe on wetlands issues, on water issues, and everything in between, and really exposing them to why natural resources is important, and hopefully sparking their interest in the field itself.
And right. Go ahead.
Sorry. Well, I was going to say, and I do believe other tribes have very similar programs as well.
Okay. Now, we were talking about those videos before. Where actually is, for those who don't know, the Bad River area in Wisconsin?
Thank you for the question. So the Bad River Reservation is along the south shore of Lake Superior, just east of the city of Ashland and west of the city of Hurley. So US 2, US Highway 2 kind of bisects the reservation. The reservation itself is mostly within Ashland County. It has a small portion in Iron County as well. But if you ever drive US 2 between Ashland and Iron County, that's where you're going to find the reservation. And then the Bad River or Mishkazibi basically goes right through the heart of the reservation. It starts up near, its headwaters is up near Mellon, Wisconsin, and then it empties into Lake Superior in the Kikagan and Bad River Sloughs wetland estuary on the Lake Superior shores.
Okay, thank you.
And I'll throw in here just really quickly that Kikagan and Bad River Sloughs not only is a Wisconsin wetland gem, but it's also a wetland of international importance. So it's one of a cadre of globally important wetlands. It's the only tribally owned Ramsar. Ramsar is the international convention that does this designation.
Okay.
And in within the United States, it's the only Ramsar site that's tribally owned, which is super cool. There's some 42 sites nationwide, but
that's not a lot. That's a great honor.
Yeah, it's a huge honor because it's such an important, beautiful, wonderful place. It's the largest remaining wild rice bed in the Great Lakes Basin, which is pretty phenomenal.
Wow, I did not realize that.
And one of the videos talks more about that, why that designation happened and why it's important.
Okay. So if you want to know, you'll have to go and watch one
of those
videos. Jessica, Katie just talked about the wild rice. How does that affect your job?
So wild rice, or monomin as it's called, is an integral part of the creation story for the band. And the reason why the band settled here, I'm not really the right person to tell that story today, other than to provide that summary. But so it's very important to the tribe to protect the wild rice. And wild rice is a wetland plant. It likes to grow in a certain amount of water on the sides of rivers, lakes, and streams. But the most abundant monomin on reservation is found in that Kikagan and Bad River Sloughs complex that Katie just shared the designations for. And it's also one of the largest natural wild rice beds left in Lake Superior. So protecting it is very important, not only for the tribe, which relies on continuing to harvest that monomin, but also just in a basin scale, it's just a very important plant as well. And it's a very important site for the plant.
How is the tribe using, both the Western science and traditional tribal knowledge to help wetlands?
Well, the Natural Resources Department is really trying to marry the two together, and in things like conducting elder interviews to hear perspective from community members and to gain that traditional ecological knowledge. And then build that into influencing some of the decisions that we make as a department in the work that we do in wetlands. And we complement that with the science, the research to make those projects more successful. So it's really trying to do what's best in both a cultural perspective and from a science perspective as well.
Okay.
If folks are curious about more about that migration story that she alluded to, again, go watch the videos, because there's one video that talks where the representative from the tribe shares that story. Mm-hmm. So you get a little bit more background there.
Okay. Katie, what advice do you have for other communities that maybe want to bring this, balance back to their area
Yeah, I think watching the videos is a great way to sort of hear how it fits into these cultures. Talking with communities like Ashland County, who have struggled with the damages that come from wetland loss, from the increasing storm events, and understanding how wetlands are helping them to find solutions to those challenges. Certainly, we have a lot of resources on our website, both for landowners who are wanting to care for their own property with wetlands on it and don't really know where to start, and for communities. We have sections on our website for both of those groups of people.
Okay. Jessica, what kind of challenges have you been seeing in your job with the Meshkibi Natural Resources Department?
Well, that's a good question, but a very broad one. I think not to get too much into it, but a lot of challenges that we face do actually come down from changes maybe at the federal level in relation to decisions about what can or cannot be included as like a water of the United States under the Clean Water Act, because the tribe does have delegated authority and federally approved water quality standards that it uses to protect not only the streams and rivers on reservation, but the wetlands as well. And changes on the federal level do kind of cascade down and impact the tribe's work and the tribe's ability to protect and restore wetlands. So I'd say that's maybe one of the bigger challenges. Other challenges is, as I mentioned before, we're on the downstream third of a watershed. So a lot of what goes on upstream and outside the reservation boundaries can really possibly be impactful to the tribe and have repercussions that aren't fully evaluated when there's certain decision making upstream.
That makes sense.
Can I chime in there too? Mm-hmm. So we talk a lot about the importance of wetland regulations, and they are super important, right? I'm a fan. And in a regulatory environment, there is a definition of what a wetland is, and there's a line that gets drawn on the ground about where the wetland is and where the wetland isn't. And that just isn't how nature works, right? It's all connected. Water is all connected above or below ground, and systems are connected. And so when we talk about regulations, it misses the point of the connectivity of the landscape and the watershed. And so taking that step back to say, how do we need to solve this problem? Because it's a problem that's a challenge for all of us. We need to look upstream. We can't solve our problem downstream unless we look upstream and figure out where the root causes are. And so I'm sure everybody's heard in the news this last week that the U.S. Supreme Court came down with a decision that changed what the federal government is able to regulate under the Clean Water Act and removes protections from a vast array of wetlands. And I'm not a fan of the decision, and I'm happy to say for Wisconsin, because our legislators and our people have been forward thinking, we have put into place at a state level many of the protections that have now been removed from federal protections. And so we still have much of the wetland protections still are in place here in the state of Wisconsin. I'll save the conversation about the broader impact of that decision nationwide to somebody who has more experience in that area. But I just wanted to help people who might be worried about that decision for the state of Wisconsin. It might not be as bad for us right now, but that is, we still need to be vigilant about protecting what we have. But then let's educate our communities and ourselves about why protecting the watershed is more important than just the little wetland.
Well, that makes total sense. Thanks for addressing that. We did have Pat email a question about that. So, Pat, there's your answer. So I think we had a question earlier. I don't know if we really got to it, but what can somebody do that's sitting out there? They don't live near a wetland. How can they help support these efforts?
That's such a great question. Thank you. Well, of course, they can become a member of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association because we are member supported. So we invite you to join us. But really, you also paying attention to what's happening in your community and the kinds of decisions that your community is making when they think about planning, community planning, hazard emergency management planning, all those kinds of things is your community thinking about wetlands? Is that part of the conversation? Often people are talking about water, but they might not be talking about wetlands. And in addition to these beautiful tribal videos, we have a couple of, one in particular, other short video that's a whiteboard explainer video that talks in 4.5 minutes about how wetlands manage water. And we have found it to be a hugely successful tool that we make available to anybody who would like to bring it to their local decision makers to say, hey, watch this little video with me, because I think our community needs to be thinking about wetlands and here's why. So making sure that people are thinking about it and bringing information to them to help them bring that into the conversation.
Okay, that sounds great. Jessica, how are the wetlands used by the tribe? What do they use those areas for?
That's a great question. So wetlands are used by the tribe in multiple ways. A lot of culturally important plant species, including like the wild rice, grow in wetlands and continue to be harvested to this day. For example, black ash is a wetland plant. A black ash is used for making baskets by tribal members and is currently under threat not only by invasive species like emerald ash borer, but also climate change changing and impacting the habitat that the wetland habitats that black ash rely on. In addition to plants, I mean a lot of wildlife species rely on wetlands for part or the majority of their life cycle, and this could include wildlife that is harvested by tribal members. But inherently, wetlands are just important in and of themselves because they provide as their own selves, and not only for the benefits that they provide the tribe, and the tribe views them that way as well. So the tribe has taken a long-term stance on protecting a lot of the key wetland areas on the reservation to make sure that they're hopefully available for that seventh generation, and taking that long-term view on protection and restoration. To make sure that they're available for the future.
Great. Can you add anything to that, Katie?
Yeah, I agree. It's sometimes hard to talk about how do tribes use wetlands, because I think there's a shift in, like, there's just a different paradigm of thinking of humans being one of many peoples on the landscape, and that the trees are people and the fish are people in this different way of thinking. So of course you are one of all the, it's your part of your family, so that you would take care of the landscape because it's your family and it supports you. And so you need to support it so that it can support you. Fundamentally, that's what it's all about.
That's a great way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Part of your family.
Yeah.
And it is, seriously.
Yeah.
Before we go, I was just looking at your website and you guys got some really cool bling for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we have a little pop-up store of t-shirts and bags and hats and things that if you love wetlands and want to help spread the word that there is such an organization called like the Wisconsin Wetlands Association working for wetlands in our state, you can wear some of our bling to help promote that out in your community. So we invite you. It's just a pop-up store, so it's only open for the next week. So go take a look.
That's right.
WisconsinWetlands.org.
It's right in the front, and it's very cute stuff. So
ladies' t-shirts even.
Yes. Yay. Well, thank you, ladies, so much for being with us. We really, really appreciate you coming in here and telling us about your work you do.
Well, so glad to be here. Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Jessica Strand, an environmental specialist with the Mushkazebe National Resources Department, and Katie Belfus. She's an outreach programs director at the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back to take your questions about paddling.